Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which right now we're doing on Thursday afternoon, although this is going to be a double recording session of the pod because Stats Williams will be joining us in a session that we're going to record later today. But right now we've got Tim Bontemps joining us from New York City.
Hello, guys.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas. Getting ready to get on the road to Memphis this weekend for the Grizzlies. And who are they playing? I can't remember. I think it's one of the Forgotten series. I'll remember it. Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I know you've predicted a Lakers sweep of the Grizzlies because you do have the Lakers one game through a 17-game undefeated postseason run. Yeah.
Well, number one, I don't make predictions. Number two, I would be surprised if the Lakers won game one. You know what I'm going to tell you real quick? We're not supposed to talk about the Lakers here, but McMahon, you know.
Save it for Stats.
I mentioned this on TV this morning, so maybe you guys heard me say it, but if you didn't, it's a good little trivia before we get into trivia. How many times do you think LeBron has lost game one in his career?
That is a good one. Jeez, how many series have there been first? Do you know that?
Dozens.
I'm going to say he's lost, I'm just going to ballpark it, 15 times.
Okay, that's a good guess. Bontemps, you want to take a guess?
I'll say 10. I know it's more than like two, so okay. But I don't know what the number is.
21.
Out of how many?
Good question. I don't know. Probably
what a trivia question.
I'm going to take it to the next level. Okay. How many has he won? How many times has he won the series when he's lost game one?
Out of 21?
I'm going to say 14.
I'll take the over 15.
It is the most in NBA history. 12. He's 12-9 in series when he loses game one.
That's still pretty impressive.
So what I'm saying is, it would not surprise me if the Grizzlies, who, by the way, were the best home team in the NBA this year. I think they were 35-6 or something like that.
That is correct.
0% surprising, A, if the Grizzlies not only win game one, but womp, it wouldn't surprise me. Two, doesn't mean the series is going to be over. But that's not what we're talking about today. I want to talk about what I think will be the best series in the East, and I don't think it's debatable. I think most people believe this. Which is Cavs-Knicks. Now, I'm going to say that we're recording this podcast at a little after noon Eastern. We don't have an update yet today on Julius Randle. I don't know if we're going to get one today. Bontemps, maybe you know a little bit more about what's going on in the Knicks than I do. But he is not as of
now. I
know
they're practicing this afternoon. That's what I know. I don't know what the status of Julius is yet.
As of right now, as far as I'm aware, he is not practiced in the 2 weeks since he sprained his ankle.
I believe he's done partial things in practice, but he has not gone through a full practice as of yet.
Just ask Tibbs. He'll give you all the info.
So that would mean that you're cutting it close for game one, even if he's given the A-okay. So I don't know if Julius Randle is going to start the series. Now, from beginning of the series to the end is seriously 3 weekends. So like it's 2.5 weeks. So the way a guy's ankle feels 2 days before game one and the way it may feel when the series potentially gets really down to it, 5, 6, 7, significantly different. This to me, the more I've looked at this series, and I watched, I think 3 of the 4 Cavs Knicks games when they played head to head this year. This to me is a genuine toss up. I think this could absolutely go either way, and Randall's health and even Isaac Okoro, who has not been practicing for the Cavs. We may get an update later than that today, but he's got a knee issue because he's a key defensive perimeter player and they just don't have that many guys in the rotation who they can trust. So what I will say is this, when you look at the Knicks, and this surprised me, the Knicks had the number 4 offensive team in the league this year. But they're not a particularly good shooting team. And so when I really looked into kind of why the Knicks, now this is something, you know, if you watch the Knicks at all, they're a really good offensive rebounding team, particularly Mitchell Robinson, who averages 5 offensive rebounds a game. So they get extra possessions. Number 2, they don't turn the ball over. I mean, Jalen Brunson goes through huge stretches with no or very low turnovers. They're one of the lowest turnover teams in the league, and they generate steals. That's all extra possessions. Well, I've seen a playoff game or two, and extra possessions really matter. And the Cavs are susceptible to giving up offensive rebounds. While the Cavs are the number one defensive team in the league, they are in the bottom 10 in rebounding percentage, defensive rebounding percentage. So I think that the Knicks, and part of the other thing is, and you know, there's a lot going on. I'm not saying this is the only thing that matters. The Knicks front line is not as good as the Cavs. I think if you are ranking the starting units, I think the Cavs have probably some more talent and more firepower, particularly if Julius Randle is out or limited. But the depth is nowhere close. The Knicks' depth crushes the Cavs' depth. And in the last two times they've played, the Knicks' bench has destroyed the Cavs' bench. Whomped them. In the last game they played like 3 weeks ago, Jalen Brunson had, I think it was a career high, 48 points. But I'm telling you, the reason the game went the Knicks' way and the way it did when they put up 130 was because Emmanuel Quickley and Josh Hart and even Isaiah Hartenstein came in and kicked tail on the Cavs. So, Bontemps, you know, I don't make predictions. I didn't see what our ESPN predictions were to even see what you, where you guys went. I haven't seen them yet, but I think this is going to be real tight and real intense and could go either way.
Yeah, I would agree. I got asked for a show today to say whether teams are going to have a good time or a bad time in a series. And I got asked about the Warriors and Lakers, and I had pretty good answers for those. And then I got to the Knicks.
If he does say so himself.
Well, the answer, at least in my mind, and the answer
on that stuff.
Well,
more good appearances.
My point was, I had an answer on the Knicks or the Warriors and the Lakers, and I got to the Knicks, and I said my answer is literally I have no idea because I just don't. I really think this. We talk a lot in the playoffs about how there's a toss-up series where you don't know what's going to happen, where really it's like probably 60-40, and you think it could go either way. This series, I do think, is legitimately, at least for me, about as close to a 50-50 as you can get, because the Cavs probably have, to your point, the better high-end talent. You know, Donovan Mitchell, if you're picking guys, is probably the first pick. I would say is the first pick in the series. But the Knicks probably have seven or eight of the top 12.
Who's the second
12.
Pick?
I would say Jalen. Yeah, I would say Jalen.
Because I had to do this the other day, and I didn't prepare, and I think I might have screwed up. Who's the third pick?
Either Garland, Mobley. I don't know. Maybe Randle. Shoot, Randle might be all.
See, I said Mobley, but Randle really had a great season.
Yeah.
I mean, Randle's on all NBA ballots.
Like Garland's a heck of a player, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Like, a nice player. There's a lot of good players. This should be a fun series.
There's a lot of good players. But to your point, if you look at the top 12 guys in the series, if you're picking, there's four Cavs in there. There might be eight Knicks.
Right.
But there's a very massive depth advantage.
But there's four Cavs in the first six, which usually matters more. Usually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, probably in the first six. Might debate a little.
And depth in playoff series does matter less. Rotations tend to get tighter. And, you know, if you play nine, you tend to get down to eight, so on and so forth.
Yep.
But the Josh Hart trade quietly was one of the most impactful deals that we saw around deadline time this year. And you saw, you know, there's the great video of Jalen Brunson, who was getting his number retired at Villanova, and Sam Rose, Leon's son, Jalen's, you know, lifelong best friend / agent, shows him his phone saying, hey, the Knicks pulled off this trade for Josh Hart. And Jalen is just giddy. You know, obviously they played together at Villanova, all that kind of stuff. Like, if you look at numbers with Josh Hart on the floor. By the way, I'll just throw out the Brunson, and Brunson's been banged up a lot. So they've only played 249 minutes. They're plus 17.3 together. Like, and every combination you look at with Josh Hart, you know, look at him with Emmanuel Quickley, they're like plus 13. And by the way, Quickley, I don't know who you guys voted for sixth man of the year. I don't have a vote. I would have voted Quickley.
I have a vote. I did vote for Quickley, and you jumped the gun on my stat. So Josh Hart and Emmanuel Quickley together in 568 minutes are plus 13.2 per 100 possessions. And like you said, you go through with Josh Hart, the numbers are good across the board. But in particular, the Knicks have absolutely trucked teams in a significant amount of time when him and Quickley have been on the court together. And I think, to Brian's point, I think the rebounding battle is going to be huge in this series. Mitchell Robinson has a chance to really control the boards. If he can really hit the offensive glass, that's a big thing for the Knicks. And if the Cavs could keep him off of it, that's a big thing for Cleveland. I think whether that Hart and Quickley duo can really wreck things coming off the bench, like you guys both pointed out in the playoffs, depth isn't always as big of a thing, but the Knicks have played really fast. They've taken advantage of their depth this year. Can they do that? And then I really think a lot of the series is going to come down to that matchup of power forward with Julius Randle and Evan Mobley. Mobley's a terrific young player. He's getting a lot better, but if Julius can win that matchup and use his physicality and really attack him, I think that that's a big thing that could swing in the Knicks' favor. If Mobley's winning that matchup, though, and Julius is sort of getting in his bag and isolating and doing the stuff that he tends to do when things start to go bad for him, I think that could really swing pretty heavily in Cleveland's direction. So that matchup in particular, I think, is going to be really one to watch as the series goes on between those two guys.
That's a great point. I think K-Bond.
Oh, look at him just praising you. The new improved, kindler, gentler McMahon.
Oh, he was trying to shout out K-Bond, and you stomped all over it. So
yeah, we got to get K-Bond some glory. The beautiful Mrs. Bontemps. Go on, Wendy.
Oh. A couple of things here. One, Mitchell Robinson is known to get in foul trouble. And so one of the things that I think you may see the Cavs do is apply pressure there. Donovan Mitchell can get to the line. Garland get to the line. The thing about Donovan is that in his playoff career, and McMahon, you've been there for a lot of it.
A lot of these, yeah.
He has been at times a killer 3-point shooter in the postseason.
Yes. It's been boom or bust for Donovan.
But he really tends to go to it a lot. I think 2 years ago when the Jazz lost in the second round, I think he averaged like 12 threes a game after he averaged like maybe 8 in the regular season. And he shot a great percentage. But like there's going to be times where you take a three and you're bailing out the opposition. So...
Well, and by the way, just on this point about foul trouble, because I looked it up out of curiosity, Knicks third this season in free throw attempts per game, Cavs 21st. So when you're talking about a Cavs team that doesn't have a lot of depth in particular, and you've got Julius Randle and Emmanuel Quickley and Jalen Brunson, these guys that are going to be attacking the rim, drawing fouls, like in the same reason that having Mitchell Robinson as offensive rebounding out there is going to be a big deal. If either Evan Mobley or Jared Allen gets in foul trouble, Cavs are immediately in a lot of trouble because there is not much behind them to come in and back them up.
The other thing I'll say is, so overall shots and free throws. Overall shots because the Knicks get extra possessions and the free throws. One other thing I want to say before I toss it to you, McMahon. Brunson had struggled a little bit this year against the Cavs in the games where Jared Allen played. Three of the games Jared Allen played in,
here we go, Ohio for MVP.
Well, here's the thing. The amazing thing about the last couple of weeks is all you and I heard all season is how Jared Allen is the most important player in the history of mankind. And to be clear before I say this, Evan Mobley is an awesome player. But starting like 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden, you just started hearing everywhere that Evan Mobley is the greatest defensive player of all time. And Jared Allen was just Jared Allen erasure. He's just gone. Not even talked about. All right, now he's coming back for the playoffs.
Finish your point before I so rudely interrupted and then Bontemps even more.
On podcasts, we talk about nuance. And there might actually be a world where Evan Mobley can be one of the league's best defenders, but having Jared Allen can be very important to the team's success.
Nuance.
Brunson did struggle shooting the ball in the games where Jared Allen played. The game he had 48, Allen was out. So was Okoro, for that matter. So I do think that the Cavs had some success against Brunson this year. Having said that, the Knicks won 3 of the 4, and the only game that the Cavs won was back in October when they hit 23 threes and Kevin Love hit 8 of them.
Yep.
So Randall's a huge factor. The Knicks have some reason to believe here. And frankly, the Cavs have very limited playoff experience. Donovan obviously has a ton of it. Rubio has a ton of it, but he has not played well and hasn't been getting a lot of minutes. And I don't think he'll get a lot of minutes. The one X factor that I'll say, although probably the biggest one again, is Randall. Danny Green didn't play at all for this team after they signed him, basically. Mm-hmm. And right at the end of the year, where they were sitting their starters, they played Danny Green a bunch of minutes and he hit a bunch of threes. Now, if you watch him play, it doesn't look like his lateral movement is where he would want it. But I will say that Danny Green, multi-time NBA champion, is sitting down there, known to get sometimes red hot from shooting. I don't know if he'll be in the rotation, but one thing I will point out is that Danny Green is on the Cavs, mm-hmm. and that there could be something happen there. Okay, Bond, I'm McMahon.
Yeah, just getting back to Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, this guy's had some unreal playoff performances, multiple 50-point performances. I mean, who in the one series against the Nuggets in the bubble? You can't question the cojones. He is a guy who has shown that he can show up on this stage repeatedly. He's also had some bad playoff series, which, you know, when the Jazz were bounced easily in the first round in five games his second year, he shot 32% from the floor in that series against the Rockets. Last year against the Mavericks, he averaged 25.5 points, but it was ugly.
Yeah. Shot by the way, there's a little Brunson Mitchell history here from last year.
For sure. Shot less than 40% from the floor in that series. They went into that series basically saying, hey, we want to limit his looks from three-point range as much as possible. He got up 8 per game, which for Donovan is a low number. Only shot 21% on those. Dorian Finney-Smith, Donovan talked about during the series, what a great job Finney-Smith did. I don't know that the Knicks have that kind of long-rangey defender, but, you know, they've got guys who I think can at least hold their own defensively against Donovan. And then, you know, also like Donovan kind of was, I'm not going to say he was checked out on the Jazz, but it was pretty clear like that chapter of Jazz history was about to end and Donovan wanted to get the hell out.
But let me just say, they got ahead 1-0.
They got ahead 1-0.
In Dallas, right?
With World Wide West sitting courtside, right. Baby, right next to Julius Brand.
The Knicks show up to bat their eyes at Brunson and they Donovan. Go up 1-0.
And
okay,
Donovan.
But Brunson, I'll say this,
the Jazz front office was much more concerned about it at that point than the Mavs front office. Let me just tell you that. Donovan wasn't the primary defender on Brunson, but he ended up matched up with him a lot. And Jalen Brunson absolutely ate his lunch every time. Like Donovan was awful defensively. Brunson did whatever he wanted that whole series to the point where like people are changing his Wikipedia page to say that he's the Utah Jazz's new owner. 41-31 when Luka's out. Torched.
Right, that's what happened. So real quick, they win game one, Luka gets hurt. It looks like the Mavericks are cooked.
Luka was hurt going into game one. He missed the first three games. First game, as you say, the Jazz win. Like, when's Luka coming back? Is Luka coming back? Next game, 41 for Brunson. Next game, 31 for Brunson. Mavs win up 2-1, and here comes Luka.
Right. Okay.
I think to McMahon's point real quick, I do think one thing to really focus on too in the series is what he pointed out about the Knicks' ability to at least slow down Garland and Mitchell, and the Cavs not really having the same guys to go at quickly, Jalen Brunson, the various perimeter players that the Knicks have. I do think that's a potential advantage in the Knicks' direction. And, you know, there's a lot of, obviously the Cavs had a great defense this year. There was talk all year about how committed Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell were to kind of executing what JB Bickerstaff did. I think JB did a terrific job with this team this year. Had him on my coach of the year ballot, but that matchup in particular at the top, and whether, you know, who wins that back and forth in terms of the ability to guard the other side, that could have a big swing too, because as it looks on paper, you've got the better talent on the Cavs side, but you've also got the better ability to stop them on the Knicks side.
Except for Mobley and Allen can cover up for a lot of flaws for your back.
Oh, for no question. No question. That's how their team is built, right? They're built for those guys to clean up to clean up messes, but you know,
true,
at the
but
point
it also
attack,
it also is negative spacing because they can't shoot, and the Knicks will take advantage of that by the way they defend them. Yep. All right. I want to also look at the number four, the 4-5 series in the West. That's a series that I'm headed out to cover. Bontemps is going to be doing the Nets Philly series and also the Knicks Cavs series because they're playing on alternate days. So you'll
wow,
be
I'm hardest sure. working man at ESPN.
Wow. I'm very excited to see the best series of the first round and probably the worst series of the first round. both.
Hey, Wendy Windhorse, you get to see me in LA for your game four. Figure I might as well head over to little Suns Clippers.
You will not see me. I opted out of game four.
Oh,
but
wow.
Game five, potential game five, I'll be there.
Wow. I didn't know that was an option. I didn't get that opt out in my contract, Bontemps.
Yeah.
By the way, game five isn't going to be in LA, McMahon. You ain't going to be seeing him. So,
right.
No, game four.
Maybe for game six.
No, he was talking. He said game five of Suns Clippers. I was saying that's in Phoenix. You're not going to see him.
All right. Anyway, that series. I know that Paul George was seen doing a little bit of shooting this week, but it's my expectation he's not going to be able to play in this series. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge factor in this. You know, the Clippers, very difficult to read throughout the year. When they rise to the occasion, they are very formidable. There were times they had stretches this year when they had everybody together that they'd look like they absolutely could win the West. Kawhi has played very strongly post-All-Star. He has gotten his stamina back up. He's back up to playing minutes. There's been a lot of stuff that we can't understand with Kawhi this year with his playing time and when he plays and when he does it, including not that long ago when he played half of a game and then just stopped and then announced he was playing in a back-to-back for no clear reason. But they have gotten his minutes up and he has delivered in those minutes. And so he is ready to play, I think, big minutes. And he's going to have to because they're going to need not only what he can do as a scorer, but they're going to need his defense. And so the Suns have been terrific offensively in when Durant's been on the floor. It's a well-known stat that they're 8-0 in the games Durant has played. It is crazy that they are going to go with a lineup that's only played 8 games. One year I covered the Cavs, the year that Shaq played with LeBron, and Shaq got hurt, and then the Cavs traded for Antoine Jameson, and they started Antoine Jameson and Shaq together for the first time in game one of the playoffs. They started a lineup in game one of the playoffs that they hadn't started the whole season. So I have seen something like this before. By the way, that team was not successful. The numbers.
Yeah, I was going to say, the question is, have we seen it work? Right. That's the question.
Yeah. In that case, it did not. In this situation, I think you look at what you're going to see. The Clippers and pretty much whoever plays the Suns are going to leave the Suns' fifth starter. And if they have to, also leave Chris Paul. The balls are going to end up in those guys' hands. And, you know, you're going to have certain pick and rolls where Ayton is going to get involved. Durant and Booker are going to have ISOs. But I think that we're going to see the classic officiating situation happen in these playoffs. I think you're going to see it big time in the Lakers-Grizzlies series. Because the Lakers are a high foul drawing team and every foul on Jaren Jackson is going to be analyzed. I think you'll see it there. I think you'll see it in the Knicks Cavs series. And I think you'll see it in this series because the Suns are not going to get to the foul line. That's not what they do. There's going to be a lot of isolation and the ball is going to end up in guys like Landry Shamet and Josh Okogie and Torrey Craig's hands. And that could be a difference maker in this series.
What about your boy Ish Wainwright, baby?
I'm not sure how much Ish is gonna get on the court. But
last time we talked, you had Ish in the I don't know, what did they have, like a ring of honor? What do they have there in Phoenix?
I believe the last game I attended with you, Ish was a hero in that game.
Yeah, exactly. This is a fact. Now, this is gonna be a fascinating series, and let me just say we all criticize the Clippers signing Russ. We thought it was a terrible fit.
Agree.
They would be in deep, deep, deep trouble. And maybe they are anyways, but they would have little to no hope if they didn't sign Russ. And the concern was, hey, how the hell is Russ going to complement two wings who need the ball in their hands? Well, when one of those wings isn't available, they desperately need Russ's ability to generate offense. And listen, Russ has played well for the Clippers. You know, you look at these last, they won 11 of the last 16. Russ is, and he's not like dominating the ball. He's not, MVP Russ where it's 30, 10 and 10 or whatever, but it's been like 16. I just looked it up. I think 16, 7 and 5, something like that. Let me get it right. 16, 5 rebounds, over 7 assists per game. Plus minus is almost plus 3 per game. And it's going to be a fascinating series. Just this, obviously, Russ tried to like ease the KD versus Russ storyline. You know, he doesn't, he's smart right. enough to know like making this about me and him is not what he wants to do going in the series. But you know,
Durant Russ did too. And in fairness for them, they both had like all kinds of star teammates since then where there's other things to worry about. So I actually
also, they've also played against each other for 7 years too, right? It's not like 7 years
on like 18 different teams. Like there's a lot of water under the bridge since then. Having said all that, Russ, the man who posted cupcakes from the 4th of July barbecue on Instagram
and wore the photographer vest.
You know, if you're giving Russ true serum, he would love nothing more than, oh, hey, KD, cute. You're on another super team. Take your ass home after the first round and Russ to be the one go boom, boom, boom. Also, hey, Chris Paul against the Clippers. There's some storylines there too, man. This is a fun series.
Well, and the thing I'm particularly curious about, I remember when you guys were at that Suns-Mavs game, we talked about the way the Mavs defended them, which is basically selling out on Booker and KD and leaving all these other guys to shoot practice threes, including Ish Wainwright, who had a huge game in that game, right? I'm really curious to see how the Clippers defend these guys, because I still think the best way to guard the Suns over the playoffs is to let KD and Devin Booker try to score 100 points between them a game and carry them to game after game after game, because they don't have anybody else on that team that can really do anything with the ball. And I just don't believe that those guys are going to be able to hold up for 2 months having to shoot 30 times a game. And because they shoot all these mid-range shots, at some point, especially with the way the modern game is, I don't know if they're playing teams that could score more. Now, the Clippers are in a different spot without Paul George. They might not be able to score enough, but if they play Denver in the second round, they play the Warriors in the conference finals, I don't think in that scenario they're going to win the math doing that either. Okay. I'm not sure that's right. I don't feel like 100% on it.
I mean, the math says that when they've been out there, they've been slaughtering the teams offensively.
They also have played no real team with Kevin Durant. Like, that's the best.
They played that stingy Dallas defense.
Yes, that's right. That's the one team they've played with everybody healthy is Dallas, when Dallas was starting their descent into madness. So, that's a slippery ass slope. Well, and like, that's why I was really bummed that they didn't play their guys against either the Lakers Friday or the Clippers on Sunday, just so we could see what this team would look like.
By the way, the Clippers did play all their guys and they barely won.
Yeah.
So I know that doesn't matter, but
that happened a lot on Sunday.
Let me say this about Bontemps' great defensive master plan here. Can KD and Booker
get back to normal
if they've got to carry things for four series? Maybe not. Does that mean that should be the Clippers game? Well, the Clippers ain't trying to wear them out so they'll be tired by the freaking Western Conference Finals.
Well, but I
four out of seven games, and if you're letting fresh KD and fresh Devin Booker combine for 45 or 50 shots, you're going to get your asses kicked.
Well, hold on. I'm not saying that you run away from them and let them shoot practice shots. My point is, I think the better game plan against the Suns, because those guys only shoot mid-range shots, basically, even though they're both incredible, is to not give up practice threes to these other guys on the team. Especially when you have Kawhi Leonard and you have some of these other guys who can actually guard Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. It's not like they have nobody to throw at these guys. I would be trying to have those guys shoot the ball as much as possible. Like, look at what this, look at the Celtics Nets series last year. The Celtics are a better team, obviously, deeper team, healthier team. But they basically did that to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. They said, you guys, we're going to make you guys shoot every time. We're not going to give up open threes to everybody else. You guys have to go win these games. The Nets didn't win those games. Those guys wilted down the stretch in those games, and they lost. I'm not saying it's going to be the same exact thing here, but I just think if you're giving all these other guys on Phoenix that aren't very good and aren't going to be able to create their own shot, opportunities to get in rhythm and hit wide open shots, that Dallas game's a great example. If Wish Wainwright's shooting 10 times in a game and they're all with nobody within 20 feet of him, he's got a decent chance of knocking some of them down and starting to feel good and getting in a rhythm. If he's standing with a guy in his face and he's got to catch it and do something, he's not going to do anything.
That Dallas game, Ish had the best shooting night of his career, but their fifth starter was Josh 0 for 8 from 3-point range.
So, yes, I understand. But if you give three or four of those guys,
it's not going to happen every game. He's not going to go 0 for 8 every game.
Right. And if you give all those guys a bunch of those wide open shots, somebody's going to get hot every game. I just don't think Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are going to combine to score 110 points every game.
No, only 75.
Well, if you can, if you have the other guys combined to score 30 or 40, you can win that game. That's, I guess that's where I'm coming from with it.
That's true. But let me just say, in the games they've played, they've been killing.
They've been again killing playing teams that are hurt.
Okay.
By the way, Bontemps, you notice the color of Wendy's shirt?
It's a very Suns color purple to me.
Or is that Lakers purple?
I'm wearing it today. It won't be going on.
Or is it King's purple?
He's covering his bases, McMahon. He's covering all of his bases.
Okay. So before we move on, two things I want to say. One, Ayton has to win the center battle. Ivica Zubac can cause a lot of problems. And frankly, Mason Plumlee was a good pickup and he can be very effective. By the way, the Clippers were pretty fortunate that Gobert got into it with Kyle Anderson, because the Clippers had a little bench little thing on Sunday where Bones Highland and Mason Plumlee went forehead to forehead. Got no attention.
Yeah, Bones, do you wonder why the Nuggets basically said, hey, does anybody have two nickels? Because if you do, we'll take them for Bones Highland. Like, dude, you already got dumped by a one seed. Don't go to L.A. and screw things up going to the playoffs. Like, dude, you're going to get a reputation real quick. You already do. Don't make it worse.
Yeah, no question. I should also point out that it's not like I'm arguing that this is going to stop the Suns. Like, they have an incredible offensive team.
All right, one more thing.
Clippers and
Norm Powell. Said.
Yes, Norm that's Powell. Exactly what I said.
How come nobody talked about Norm Powell for Sixth Man of the Year?
Because he was pretty rough for a good stretch of the season and has since played much better.
You have a ballot?
Do I have a ballot? Yeah.
Was he on yours?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
Where?
Third.
Okay. Bontemps, was he on yours?
He was not on my ballot.
All right. Anyway.
They got outscored by 4 per 100 when he was on the court this year. Ooh. And he struggled for a while. He had a really good second half of the year, but I didn't have him in the top tier of candidates.
So Norm Powell could be a factor, because when the guy comes in and when he's hot, he's a game changer. So
boy, especially with Paul George out, they need his scoring. And he's a guy that could go for 25, and he's played in finals games. He's played in big time playoff games.
Yeah. So is Eric Gordon too. So we'll see what happens there. Before we move on, before we go, Bontemps, even though we've got our trivia man stats coming on a little later, you think you have a trivia question?
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week. the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
I do have a trivia question. I got asked it on Get Up earlier this week, and it was so good.
We have a sponsor for this yet?
Bring it back. Not yet. We should have one.
Guys, it's all about confidence. Let's go. I got this.
Courtesy of Hembo, sneaky Hembo question. LeBron is not favored to beat Memphis underdog in the series, despite the chatter about the series. When is the last time a LeBron team was not favored or was an underdog in a series, not including the finals? So non-final series, because that's easy.
Is it back to his first Cleveland stint? Or was it last year?
I'm not going to tell you when it was.
The only thing is it possible that, and I'm not, this is not an official guess, but if it's right, okay. I will take it. Actually, yeah. Screw it. It's an official guess.
Yes.
What about against the Celtics in 2018 when they didn't have home court advantage and they were a shaky team?
That's a great guess. It's not the right answer.
Okay. All right. Let me.
Then I will say he wasn't favored non-finals. Pistons 2007.
That is not the answer. Celtics in 2008 on TV, but it's a sneaky Hembo question.
They were favored in 21 over the Suns.
The Lakers were favored in that series. I knew that wasn't the answer because it's a sneaky Hembo question. So Brian's guess, I said it was a great guess for a reason.
Yeah, I forgot that Celtics. I forgot that Celtics won.
It's going back to, you said Celtics 08?
On TV, I said Celtics 08. I was wrong. Brian just said Celtics 2018 Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, and I also said that was Pistons, a great guess. Pistons 07. And you said that's wrong too.
Celtics that's in wrong. 10, the last series of his first stint. No.
Damn it.
Nope.
No, they were the number one overall seed in 8, 9, and 10.
We'll go back to saying Brian's guess in 2018 was a great guess. It just wasn't the right guess.
Brian's guess in 2018. Okay, here we go.
Wait, who'd they play before the Celtics?
There's no way they were not favored to beat Toronto.
That is the answer.
Are you serious?
Wow.
They swept, dude, Toronto. Are you kidding me? That is
I went
and put some money down. Give me a damn time.
So to give Hembo credit, who at some point we'll have on the pod to do trivia, when he does sneaky Hembo trivia on Get Up, it's always sneaky. There's always a twist to it. So remember, the Cavs had went 7 games with the Pacers. They only basically won because Nate McMillan sat Victor Oladipo for like 5 minutes with 2 fouls in the first half.
A couple of foul calls that went wild. And also LeBron hit a buzzer beater in game 5. There was a bunch of different things.
I'm just saying in game seven alone, they escaped from game 7 against the Pacers. And that year, Toronto had won like 60 some games. And they went in that series. And I did not remember it, but they went in that series as underdogs with that, you know, decrepit Cavs team around LeBron. And then LeBron hit that shot over OG and they, you know, it became
the Bronto. It was an incredible shot.
The Cavs had swept them the previous year and beat them.
I know.
By the way, that year they beat them in 6. It was 2-2 after 4. And LeBron had one of the great, you know, LeBron James of feet. That's a top 10 LeBron quote. One of my favorite ever, and my favorite ever LeBron quote was, at least in playoffs, was when he said, that play that David Black grew up, I scratched it. Was like, I mean, I got chills when he said that.
A close second was this quote about Toronto, though, in 2016.
All right. So it was 2-2 after 4. Cavs won games 5 and 6 relatively easily. And after game 6 in Toronto, LeBron says, I've been in a lot of adverse situations in my career, and this was not one of them.
Basically, they got no chance in hell. Okay.
There's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason it was called the Bronto. It was a repeated story. So anyway, I thought that was a very good trivia question.
Oh,
so
that was a great trivia question. I would never have gotten that.
Well, listen, also the thing is DeMar DeRozan's cute little daughter, her vocal cords weren't really developed at that point. So had they been developed fully, that could have been a completely different.
You know what about his daughter that if you'd asked me about DeMar's daughter before the screaming thing, I would have known. Do you remember when somebody broke in to DeMar's house in LA during the pandemic, thinking, I think they thought it was Kylie Jenner's house. Oh, so DeMar must have a nice house.
You think?
And his daughter was walking through the house and sees an intruder. Mm. And
I don't even know this story. Wow.
I'm 99% sure he may have more than one daughter. And if that's the case, but I think his daughter was 7 when that happened. And so that was 3 years ago. So his daughter looks like she's about 10 now. So I think I think she screamed and DeMar became aware of it and came and, got the individual out and called the cops and they made an arrest. But now we know that, it's probably a large and very fine estate there in LA. And her scream is a great talent.
That's the best defensive performance in NBA play in history. To hold a team to 50% from the free throw line is historic dominant defense. It is.
I have to say that
I'm reading about this. I just looked up this DeMar thing. The guy did think it was Kylie. Yeah, I was wild. Okay. I somehow didn't ever hear about that.
He got into a sliding glass door that was left open.
Yeah, and he thought it was Kylie Jenner's house too. That's wild.
Never mind. Is that Devin Booker's on and off again flame? Or I get all these Jenners confused.
I believe Kendall Jenner is the Devin Booker.
My bad.
That is a definition of a K-Bond question, which she is not here to ask. True. So.
I did meet the very nice Miss Khloe Kardashian during old Lamley's brief stint in Dallas. She would sit right behind. You
probably wouldn't recognize her now.
Well, she probably wouldn't recognize me either.
We needed K-Bond to watch that Lakers playing game the other night where we had, Tristan and Karl Towns playing in that. There's a whole nother
K-Bond,
way to
K-Bond disappointed that Tristan Thompson is back in the NBA. I'll just say that she's not Tristan Thompson.
Listen, there's a lot of the IT department's not a big fan. let's not throw any shots. He's gonna be back. He's gonna be back with us at ESPN soon. I don't know how much longer.
Listen, I love Tristan. I love Tristan. He's a great guy. All right.
The ladies don't like extracurriculars.
Yes, I believe that's true. All right. Anyway, we'll be back with you later tonight. We're going to speak with Mr. Williams. And thank you for listening. And we'll be talking to you guys a little bit later. Hopefully, I still have a voice.
I wish I knew how to say to be continued in Espanol, but I don't.
Well, work on that. Go ask the IT department. She does everything else.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay, we're back. It's 9 o'clock Eastern on what day is it? Thursday. Everybody's a little bit loopy. Bontemps is wearing his hat backwards.
Man,
McMahon is
that's that
feisty.
Well, that's a normal occurrence.
Yeah. Now joining us from Los Angeles, from ESPN Stats and Information. You guys all know him if you listen to this pod, but you just don't know him, but you know him. He was flying out to LA today because he's helping out the Countdown crew.
Helping out the Countdown crew. That's not the right way to describe it.
Propping up.
Giving them all the info. Come on.
Yeah, you're getting them in trouble there, McMahon. Matt Stats Williams. Hello, Stats. What's up?
Nothing much. Thank you guys for having me. This is an honor. Pretty cool.
Listen, well, Stats did ask, though. He did ask to be introduced as the man who somehow makes you idiots look smart. Stats Williams. That's what he asked to be introduced as.
Definitely
you
not
idiots, not me.
I'm just going to tell you guys right now, something happened between this afternoon and now, and McMahon is feisty. So I don't know what's going to happen. FYI.
We're going to have some fun with Stats, who's the hardest working guy in our whole group. So it's good to have him on to give us some facts.
So Stats, real quick, kind of give us a breakdown as to what your average day is like, and you know, what shows that you work with, and during the show, you know, like just around Countdown, tell us how your evening is around Countdown so people can get it.
Tell us how your day is going to be today.
Yeah, so today I would say, like, obviously outside of travel.
When we say today, we mean
Friday. So we have our quadruple header on Saturday. So Friday will be a lot of prep ahead of that. Basically doing player notes for all the games, give Greeny something to say for bumps, things like that. And then honestly, it's a lot of answering questions and coming up with fun, interesting, different content. Try to use historical stuff, player tracking stuff. Trying to find the most interesting items I can that people may or may not find interesting. And oftentimes there'll be stuff that I'm interested in as well that I hope the general public likes or doesn't like. Who knows?
But you guys prepare this big report before these games. And so it's a big report before one game, but then before four games, it's this giant, you know, I say packet, that implies it's printed out. It's not printed out. It's all digital, but that's just very, and it's not just used by the Countdown crew. It's also used by the broadcast crew, Van Gundy and Breen and Mark Jackson and, you know, all the other folks like that.
Listen, yeah. Stats work is so valuable that literally the only thing I do on Slack and the one reason I learned how to use this newfangled technology is for that Stats and Info group Slack channel during games where they're putting out content for every game, but especially like if you get like a primetime ABC game or like a high profile game, obviously all the playoff games, like you can ask stuff in there and they'll get it to you, but usually you don't have to ask. They're coming up with things long before you're thinking of even asking.
During the finals, we should put the Slack. I mean, we won't, I don't actually mean this, but it would be, we have like, you know, all these quadruple casts and we've got, you know, like they're, you know, where everybody's brainstorming of ninth screen. Honestly, if you put the ESPN Stats and Info Slack up there, especially during a finals game when we've like all hands on deck, Matt and all of his coworkers, especially in the gambling world, it would be tens of thousands of people would watch that channel as a second screen.
We're just talking about making Stats into a star. I like it. That's what we got to do.
I don't know about that, but obviously it's myself and many others, a part of my team as well. And we live track every single game. Stats analysis group led by Alex Santiago, give her a shout out. She worked extremely hard on that side, coming up with kind of the different more. And during the playoffs, we care a little bit more about like the X's and O's and things like that, more so during the regular season. And her group do a fantastic job, along with using Second Spectrum info, which we'll get into a little bit here. kind of give everybody a little bit of a different taste of what we can do in the playoffs.
Wendy, you see what he did? He gave credit to others instead of just saying me.
Are you suffering from a lack of credit from this podcast? Are you saying that I haven't supported you for like
every time I punch that bad boy up, I see a cartoon Wendy. I don't see Bonnie. Yeah,
I drew that. I drew it. It was my drawing, and I put it on there. Also, I just want to say the amazing thing about the Stats and Info Group and like when the game is going on. So I just want you to think about what's going on at ESPN when we've got like a finals game or a conference finals game. Obviously we're broadcasting it on the big network, but we're also probably doing it on ESPN radio. It's going out on various international feeds. There's SportsCenter shows, you know, getting ready for it. There's the Countdown show that's getting ready for it. There's ESPN radio pregame, halftime, postgame shows. There's international shows from all across the world that that are in the SportsCenter branding, that various ESPNs in other languages. And then all of the people like us who are like the writers, mm-hmm. people who are going to have to go on SportsCenter, people who are writing stories about it, and the editors. Like it's a gigantic operation that everybody is sort of hooked in getting all this stuff. Okay, Stats. That's enough fetting. How about some stuff that you think going into these series that, I know what you want to start. You want to start off with the Sacramento.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Light the beam, baby.
We got a hot take. Can I reveal how you set this up, Stats?
Please do.
Well, earlier he and I were texting about this appearance on the pod, and I want to quote him accurately. I don't want to have any mistaken comments here. Okay,
Warriors Nation's just going to come after me. They don't even know who I am. They're just going to find me. Just come after me.
I'm scrolling through here. Okay, so here's the quote. Really curious why so many people are down on Sacramento. Are the Warriors going to win in five? ? The Kings are good. ! Yes. The floor is yours. The floor is yours, buddy. Explain why the Kings are going to win this series.
Yes, so that's Williams.
Yeah, so obviously we know Sacramento, best offense. You can, whatever metric you want to call it, NBA history, player tracking error, whatever you want to do. Obviously this year is way more inflated when it came to offense, but regardless, this season, they were statistically the best offense. I am so fascinated with their offense. Everything goes through Sabonis, but it's not like kind of like the Nuggets do with Jokic, but it's the triple handoffs. They're second most efficient dribble handoff team while running a ton of them. With Sabonis, I think the interesting part is that as a setter on dribble handoffs, he's run over 1,500 dribble handoffs, over 600 more than any other player per second spectrum tracking. Everything goes through him, but not only with him. You also have De'Aaron Fox, one of the best drivers in the league, best clutch player, is going to win clutch player of the year, along with Keegan Murray. Along with Keegan Murray, I don't think people expected this from Keegan Murray, to hit 200 threes, shoot over 40% on threes, and be that X factor, that catch and shoot player. Along with Harrison Barnes, who knows this Warriors team extremely well. I also want to mention Mike Brown, former assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors for a long time, knows NBA, that team extremely well.
NBA champion Harrison Barnes, give the man his respect.
Yes,
multi-time NBA champion Mike Brown, I believe multiple.
Yes, and then. Also mention Kevin Herter With Kevin Herter, I think his ability to come off the dribble handoffs, that Sabonis Herter action is one of the most efficient in the league. And his ability to go off the dribble, not quite Steph level. Steph is number one, then it's Buddy Hield, and then Herter going 150 attempts or so. I'm just so impressed by how that group has come together. Now, I already know the
report. We've talked a lot about the Sacramento Kings offense, Stats.
Yes.
We have not talked about the other side of the ball.
They're just playing Steph. No big deal.
I will say, if I already know the rebuttal is how they're going to guard Steph, and I said that's Mike Brown's job, not mine. I don't have to determine that. But I will say, I think when it comes to a shootout, I really think they can potentially gun with them. And that home crowd, I was watching as they were progressing toward clinching a playoff spot and how into it that crowd was. Hadn't seen a playoff game since 06. Snapped the longest drought of all time for not making the playoffs. I think that crowd's going to be engaged. We already know the Warriors' home road splits are very weird. Obviously, they've won a road playoff game in 27 straight series, longest streak ever. I'll give them that. But the home road splits this year have been very strange with them, and I'm not sure that's going to solve itself. The other X factor of Golden State, obviously, is the return of Andrew Wiggins. Looks like he'll be back for game one. I'm very curious to see how he gets back into it. This group hasn't played together. That starting five hasn't played together since early February. So I'm curious. It's almost like one team, we know what their identity is. We've seen it all year. Sacramento has not missed a lot of games. Their starting lineups played 63 games together. Only team that didn't have to use at least 10 starting lineups this year. They only used 9.
And the fewest games lost due to injury, I think, yes, was like something like 76 or something like that.
Where'd you get that nugget?
Preparation and research for another story that I wrote.
Yeah, from stats. Go on.
I wouldn't say that. But it's one of those where obviously we know the Warriors. We know the identity of that group. The identity's been a little different this year. It has not felt the same as the other Warriors teams. And that's why I really think Sacramento can make some noise. And I will say, I think they will win this playoff series.
Wow. I was giving you a hard time. I didn't think you were actually going to predict it. Wow.
He's got more cojones than the man in the cartoon. I'll say that.
Well, the thing about the Kings that I don't understand, and it's probably just because I don't know the team that well. So that we know that they're not a good defensive team. I believe they rank 24th in defensive rating at the end of the season. Maybe they're tied for 23rd or something like that.
I'll give you the official number while you're talking.
Well, here's what is interesting about them. When they play on the road, they're actually a top 10 defense. Their road defense is top 10.
Yeah, they're like the anti-Warriors.
Exactly. But at
home, tied for 23rd with Utah, to be specific.
Okay. At home, they've got the 29th ranked defense. And I think that's because, I don't know, but I think it's because at home, they're so dynamic offensively that they just play straight loosey-goosey.
Well, that's interesting. Chuck and duck. Because one thing I was going to bring up, listening to the stats there, is that, look, the atmosphere in Sacramento, as you mentioned, is phenomenal. I was able to get to a couple games up there, like beautiful arena, passionate fan base, starved to have a relevant team to root for. Obviously, they've gotten that this season. They have not been, by playoff team standards, any good at home, though. They are 23-18 at home this year. Depending on whether the Wolves get in or not, that would be the worst record in the West as far as a home record for playoff teams. Matter of fact, it's tied with the Clippers. And then I'm looking at the East real quick. It would be tied with the Clippers and the Nets and the Knicks, actually, is the worst home records. They've actually been better on the road than at home. And Stats, this is, I am curious, because we've talked about this on the pod before. Mm-hmm. The Warriors obviously have a historic streak of playoff series with a home win. That is up to what? How many is
road
that?
Win.
Road win, my
you
bad.
Said 27.
He just said it, 27.
27. And then you mentioned the road record this year, which is, you know, Wimby Derby type of bad. Mm-hmm. What do you put more stock into? This, like, era or this season? Because they're both like pretty large sample sizes at this point.
And that's honestly what I've been kind of wrestling with this group all year. It's like, I see the historic nature of what that trio has done in Golden State. And I will say that I think, I don't want to completely like disregard the regular season, but I do think them losing Wiggins for as long as they did had a monster impact on them. And I don't think he's appreciated enough. And I think after him being out for the past couple months, I think that appreciation grew a lot. And that, I would say, my one fear of going with Sacramento, and kind of relate to your question, is it more of, was Sacramento really good, or did they get the benefit of being whole all year while these other teams are so disjointed? And we'll find out Saturday, honestly, is kind of the best answer to that, of how real is this team. And I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm all in. But I can see where people are coming from, where it's like, well, the only reason they're ahead of the Lakers and the Warriors and the Clippers is because, and the Suns, is because those teams were beat up all year. And I think that's a very fair thing to say. But at the same time, I was very impressed with what they've put together this year. And even still, I think this is great for that group to carry over Even if they lose in six or seven in the series, mm-hmm. it'll be great for them to carry that into the future. And I still think what Monty McNair did, putting that, making that trade, is very risky. We all went after it, but at the,
I didn't.
But,
oh, stop!
But getting Sabonis works for that group. And I will say the one thing I am very curious too of how Davion Mitchell will do. How many minutes will Davion Mitchell play? How much will he be put into it? How much will he guard Steph? I think that he could be a very big X factor in this because he's not the offensive guy. He's not a good 3-point shooter. That's not his game. But defensive wise, could be a huge X factor in trying to limit Steph. I will say
Steph shot 58% against the Kings in the regular season this year.
Well, I am fascinated by these home road splits. I did not realize this. I just looked them up while we were talking. So Sacramento at home was at an offensive rating of 121.6.
I'm not as much of an idiot as you think.
I don't. No one said you were an idiot, pal.
Yeah, because stats props you up.
That's right. And on defense, they're tied for 28th with the Spurs, 118.2 points per possession, per 100 possessions.
Yeah, so my point is there that, like, the Warriors' Achilles heel is their road play. They may not be playing a team that's potent at home.
Let me give you some credit and lay out the stats. So on the road, Sacramento has the second-best offense, well behind Philly, ironically, tied with Boston, 115.7 points per 100 possessions. So six points per 100 worse. But their defense is eighth best, 113.8 points per 100 possessions, five points better.
So you know what that tells me? That tells me that the Kings are not going to the shotgun willies around the league.
It tells me that when they're at home, they're so comfortable playing offense that they ain't even worried about defense. That's what it tells me. All right, Stats, what else do you got for us on other series?
Yeah, so I think another interesting series, I do think Sixers will dominate, but I think the defensive coverage by the Nets against Joel Embiid will be very interesting. That's what I want to get your guys' opinion on. So back in February 11th meeting, he got double-teamed seven times on post-ups by the Nets. It was his most in any game all year. But his ability to pass out of double-teams this year has been significantly better. But if you're the Brooklyn Nets, what would be the way you would try to stop Joel Embiid? And would you go all in on him and just risk the other guys going off? How would you try to limit Joel Embiid?
I would definitely go all in on him. And Nick Claxton I like him a lot. He's obviously super athletic, nice shot blocker, great finisher. You can't be that light in the ass and have any hope of guarding Joel Embiid one-on-one. I mean, it's just a simple fact. Like, you know, Joel Embiid, I mean, he'll use him as a Q-tip. Are you kidding me?
If I was the Nets and I was trying to find a way to win this series, I think there's two things I would try to do. One is I think McMahon is right in that sometimes I think it would be smart to throw some doubles at him. I also wouldn't necessarily mind letting Joel try to go after it for a while earlier in the game and then maybe try to rush him with some doubles late. The other thing is at the other end of the court, they just got to shoot like 63s a game. Like the only way they've got a chance is to just try to win the numbers game to a dramatic degree. Cause I wouldn't let these other guys on Philly get comfortable and start making threes. Cause then I think you're just totally cooked. So I'd probably try to, you know, keep Claxton off of Joel. The one thing they did in that game was they had Claxton coming over and helping as the guy doubling instead of guarding him because he's got no chance to guard him anyway, being sort of as a help side defender. I think that's probably what they'll do. But
who does guard him in that situation?
I think you're just switching guys onto it. Like you're just sort of scrambling around, I think. Because there's nobody on the team big enough to do it, really. I mean, that's their problem.
They don't have like the PJ Tucker type who can at least kind of get under him and try to keep him off his spots. And they've got a bunch of long, lean dudes on that team. Claxton, Bridges, Finney Smith. You know, Cam Johnson's a little thicker, but it's not like he's...
Man, I tell you what, though, man. I just think about that Celtics game from a couple of weeks ago. They didn't have Robert Williams, and they were trying... They were trying the same strategy on Joel. Like they were trying Blake. They were trying Grant Williams, Mike Muscala, and he was Grant cooking Williams, them man. All.
Poor
they were cooking them all. And so they had no choice. They had to start doubling him, and then he just started boop, boop, boop. You know, I'm letting PJ Tucker shoot corner threes, because one-on-one, he gets the ball at the nail, you know, the nail right. being, you know, high post foul line area. That jumper for him is like a 65% shot. It might as well be a 6-footer. I mean,
that's the thing they've changed about the way their offense is run this year, is it's like when PJ came over, they started working on it in training camp, because Joel last year against Miami was catching the ball down in the low post a lot, and Miami was bringing double teams, and Joel was turning the ball over. He couldn't really react to it well. So basically now they have him catching the ball either at the high post or at the nail or at the free throw line extended. So then he can face up and see the whole court and see these doubles coming at him. And that's where, to Matt's point, he's been much better this year at reacting and passing out of those double teams. And it's also setting him up to get those 15 footers, which, like you said, it's basically just a layup at this point whenever he takes those shots.
Embiid has a lot of prime Dirk in his game. And you would never think of that comp, because obviously Embiid's so much bigger and, you know, just a much more physically overwhelming force. But like, he's operating, like you say, at the nail, that catch it, face up and go to work. And boy, if you want to let him shoot that jumper, you know, he'll knock down a high percentage. That was Dirk's, you know, that was Dirk's office from, you know, the middle of his career, you know, until the decline started. And then obviously he's got that one legger in his game that he took from Dirk, like a lot of other guys did. I mean, this guy is 7'2", 280 and has that kind of Dirk-like skill set, which that's a pretty good way to win a scoring title.
And an MVP. All right, what else we got, Stats?
So the other series in the East I find super interesting, obviously, is Knicks-Cavs. Now, I know a lot of focus on the guards, Brunson, Mitchell, and honestly, if we get the kind of duel that they gave us a few weeks ago, and when Brunson had 48, Mitchell thing at 42, we're in for a fun series. But the one element that I'm super fascinated with in that series is Cleveland ranked first in defensive efficiency, but they're 23rd in three-point defense. And now you can argue all day, is that luck? Is that actual defense? Whatever the case may be. The Knicks love to drive and kick. That is their bread and butter. That's what they do quite often. And they ranked in the top 10 on threes made that came off kickout passes. The Cavs ranked 29th in defense on threes that came off a kickout pass. And and that was roughly 41%. When Allen and Mobley were on the court together, that was 45% they were giving up on threes.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Passes.
Whoa.
Wow.
So
that is a hell of a stat.
So I'm trying to, like, I'm all for them trying to protect the paint all day. But that almost gave me weird vibes of, like, is this like a Bucks thing that they went through a couple of times where teams just drained threes and that's how they got eliminated? But I wanted to present that to you guys to get your thoughts on.
Well, they've definitely had quite a few games this year where they've gotten cooked on threes, but you know, as you mentioned, they're number one overall. So it's a give and take situation with them. That's 45%
on kickout passes and shooting directly off of it. I just think obviously it's very tough for Allen and Mobley to both rotate like that, right? And teams just drain threes against them, and they had a lot of good looks. Like, I watched some clips of, like, even from the Hornets game from a few nights ago, and they were getting open looks, especially in the corner. So it'll be a very tough thing for them to try to navigate through that, especially the Knicks love shooting threes.
So I was looking at it now. The Cavs had the lowest opponent three-point attempts per game, but as you said, Matt, they were 23rd in percentage given up, the 37% a game. And as you were talking about that, the guy that it made me think of was RJ Barrett, who has not had a very good year for the Knicks. If you look at the Knicks stats, they're sort of a pedestrian team when RJ Barrett is on the court. And then when he goes off the court, they become a super team. And he's in particular been very streaky shooting the ball. And when you talk about those stats in particular, it makes me think that he's going to be a pretty significant swing piece in this series, both from the standpoint that if he's hitting shots, then the Knicks look pretty good. And if he isn't hitting shots, how quick is Tibbs going to pull him, like as he's tended to do since the trade deadline, and go with guys like Josh Hart, another very iffy, streaky three-point shooter, or Quentin Grimes or Emmanuel Quickley, guys that are much more three-point bombers that can maybe take advantage of that.
You know, this 3-point stat with those two guys on the floor explains something that that I've kind of wondered. And I just double checked this with pbpstats.com, where you can punch in guys and, you know, see different lineup combos. So when they've got both those bigs on the floor, they're very good defense, 111.7, which I don't know where that rank in the league this year, but pretty high up. But they're better with one or the other. It goes down to 110.8 when it's just Mobley and 109.5 when it's just Allen.
Boy, don't tell that to Bontemps. So
well, hey, don't tell that to all these people who voted Mobley as defense player of the year. But, you know, these are simple facts. And then they also have opponent, you know, like opponent shooting percentage, opponent 3-point percentage with both is 38.6. With just Mobley, it's 38.5. And then just Allen, 33.5. You know, like you said, there's a lot of noise in any in all those kind of numbers. There's a lot of noise, but the fact they've had so many threes splashed on them, drive and kick with both bigs on the floor, that's a pretty good explanation. And look, like Mobley, his whole life has been a rim protector, and so when you're playing the four, especially in today's NBA, like you got to kind of play against your instincts some, as a guy who's probably cleaned up things at the rim for his entire life and realized, like, hey, those corner threes can give you a lot of trouble too.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things too where obviously I bring that up, and then Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, who are great pull-up shooters, each hit 5 pull-up threes. It's like, okay, never mind. Well, that was a good thought. But
that's going to happen when you have Donovan Mitchell. That's just that will happen.
That's how it is.
All right, you got anything else for us?
Yeah, so the one thing in the West, obviously Lakers Grizzlies being talked about a lot.
Can't imagine that.
Is it?
I
is
know.
It?
Wait till I get to Memphis, baby.
It's so, like, you know, by the way, today was a fun day at ESPN because we spent more time talking about Zion's pregame dunk than we did about the game where the Thunder had this, like, you know, coming out performance.
Well, that'll be the last we talk or we see Zion for a while, at least. But go on, Stats.
All right. Sorry, Stats. Sorry, I interrupted you.
So obviously there's a lot to break down that series. I think the one thing I've been curious about is the defense against John Morant from the Lakers. During the regular season, it was a lot of Dennis Schroeder. But all of those games, none of those games were full. You did not have a single game out of their matchups where LeBron, AD, and Ja all played. But when looking at Schroeder, actually, like, the numbers were okay-ish. Like, they were good, but it's one of those where it's a 3-game sample size, how much do you take from that? But I was curious, like, when you guys – if you guys were the Lakers trying to game plan against Ja, obviously you have the option of just trying to basically go under screens, dare him to shoot threes. It's obviously one option. I thought another good idea was potentially Jared Vanderbilt, giving that some run. But the other kind of issue there too is that Lakers-Grizzlies series that the Grizzlies love to get out in transition. And I was trying to look into the numbers of trying to figure out how are the Lakers going to stop them in transition. The Lakers transition defense, even though their defense was better the final 2 months, the transition defense was still bottom half of the league for the entire season. It's in the bottom 10. So I was also going to, it's almost like a two-part of, like, how do you stop Ja? And then adding to that, how do you stop Ja getting out in transition and hitting those guys in transition, Luke Kennard, Desmond Bane on the three?
Well, the answer to how do you stop Ja, the first line in the scouting report is keep him out of transition. And then it's like, well, great idea. How the hell do you do that? Right? that's tough, especially, like, you know, when you play the Grizzlies, who, especially without Steven Adams, they are not a good rebounding team. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s biggest flaw is that he's, you know, averaging 6.6 rebounds, and that's his career high. But how much do you want to crash the offensive glass and risk, you know, a rebound leading to 3 seconds later, you know, Ja's jumping off of a trampoline and doing a halftime show type of dunk on you? Or, as you said, Kennard or Bane, now they've got two guys who are elite shooters. That's an interesting thought with Vanderbilt. And he was great when I saw the Lakers last here in Dallas against Luka. I think that's the kind of guy Vanderbilt's really best suited for, though, is a guy who his length, his activity, his tenacity can wear him down. He doesn't necessarily have to be worried about
being outquicked. Yeah, pretty much have to worry about being outquicked with Ja.
Yeah.
So I, a couple things. I think to your point about Dennis Schroeder, to me, the Lakers need to start Dennis Schroeder over D'Angelo Russell, have him guard Ja Morant, and then when Ja is off the court, have D'Angelo come in and run some pick and rolls with AD and take advantage of him then. But to me, if they try to start D'Angelo out there against Desmond Bane and Ja Morant, that is going to be rough. Because you saw last year in that Wolves-Grizzlies series, the Grizzlies really took advantage of Russell throughout it. To me, this series really comes down to Memphis's discipline. That's discipline from Dylan Brooks offensively and fouling, and it's Jaren Jackson Jr. fouling. In the three games these teams played this year, Jaren Jackson Jr. had 15 fouls in 96 minutes. He has to stay out of foul trouble. Dylan Brooks shot 11 for 45 and was 6 for 20 from 3 in the three games this year. He cannot do what he did against the Warriors and shoot these guys out of the series. Now, the one thing I think that the Grizzlies are, I would guess they're going to do, and I think will work to their benefit, we saw in that Wolves game, Jared Vanderbilt is a really nice player. He's a terrific defensive player. He's basically zero on offense. And I think what I would guess the Grizzlies are going to try to do is start Xavier Tillman, who's a pretty good defensive big, and have him guard AD and try to avoid the minutes of having Jaren Jackson Jr. be on him and limit him for foul trouble. Have him guard Jared Vanderbilt and just roam around.
I was going to have him guard. Right.
Have him guard him and help. And the other thing I think is a really big factor in this series, people look at the break the Lakers are getting at the beginning. They get the 4 days off till game one, and then the couple days off till game two, and the couple days off till game three. Game three to game seven is every other day the rest of the way. And that it's going to be rough travel if it goes long for McMahon. And it's also, right. It's also going to, I think, really
wear on. I don't have
that
first-class clause, but I'll be all right.
It's also going to, I think, really wear on the Lakers as that series goes along. You saw how tired LeBron was at the end of that Wolves game. And I think, to me, it's imperative the Lakers are up 2-1 if they want to win this series after game three, because I could definitely see them wearing down as this series goes along. If they're down 2-1, it starts going every other game. I think they're going to be in a lot of trouble.
So real quick, back to Ja. I do want to point out real quick, Pat Bev was a pest against Ja in that first round playoff series last year. So it's a good thing that the Lakers traded for Pat Bev before this season. And wait a second. They dumped old Pat Bev at the trade deadline. He might have been handy in this series.
Well, if Dennis Schroeder plays anything like he did against the Wolves, it was one of his best games I've seen him play, that will be a significant help, but that's a pretty big if.
So I will say this, the Lakers do play pretty fast. They're in the top five in the league in pace. So when you say against the Grizzlies, slow it down, that's a common strategy point against them. That takes the Lakers away from a weapon of theirs. And part of it is that they're not a great offensive team. You know, back in the bubble, when they won the title and they had great shooting going on, they didn't have to play fast because they were able to get half-court offense generated. So if the Lakers slow it down, theoretically, you know, it does take away from their offense, which is probably going to be their problem spot. You know, they're going to need some of these guys who are streaky, like Malik Beasley, like D'Angelo Russell, to get going. But I did not realize that about games 3 through 7. That is, it's a 4-hour flight if you can get a nonstop, which you pretty much can't.
As someone who's had to fly into Memphis numerous times in his life, being from Mississippi, best of luck with that.
Well, it's a sweet deal where I'll have layovers in DFW, but not going.
You won't be. I was going to say not be going.
That's
home.
That's the worst.
I am. I'm thinking a pit stop at home between games 2 and 3, but other than that, I'll be, and the worst part is not only will I not be able to go home, but I'll be stuck looking at Max 7 Seeds ugly mug the whole time.
You guys fly different airlines, so you guys, at least you won't.
Woo! There, that is true.
But back to Tim's original point about the free throws thing too. The Lakers led in free throw attempts and also gave up the fewest free throw attempts per game this year. Sixth team to ever do that. And
wait till
I know,
these post game press conferences, baby.
I know. And
here
it's,
we go.
And the other team, it was like a Hornets team from 6 years ago, a Sixers team in the mid 80s, and then 3 Wilt teams, which makes sense because he never fouled and he got to the line all the time. But that's going to be a huge factor in this too. And I thought Jaren Jackson Jr., I think his fouls per game are up this year, but I thought he did a better job of trying to avoid the fouls.
Yeah, he got better as it went.
Yeah, well, I know people bring that up all the time. I thought he was better this year at doing that. You know, the numbers might not necessarily say that, but – and that actually – I'll go back super quick to the Kings-Warriors series too. The Sabonis fouls too. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a big X factor in that series as well. I wanted to mention that because Sabonis fouled out, I think, the most in the NBA. So that'll be a X factor in that as well.
If Jaren Jackson could stay on the court and Dylan Brooks doesn't shoot them out of the series, Memphis absolutely should win this series. They are the better team. But with the injuries to Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, it could potentially expose their interior defense as a problem. Like I said, I think Xavier Tillman is a really important player in this series. If he can hang out there and hold up okay against AD and keep Jaren from having to guard him for long stretches, and he can play help defense and not be in a situation where he's got a foul, that will really help them a lot.
Yep. Well, Wendy says that the Lakers are going to be playing 8-on-5. So, you know, we'll see. Stats, if there's
I'm
any.
Saying that's what they're going to, not what people are going to think.
I'm just saying, if there's any particularly glaring, specific ref stats with the Lakers, I'll be happy to take them. I don't think McMinimum wants them. I'll be happy to take them. No, seriously, though, just to kind of pull the curtain back, this, like, the amount of information we get from the stats and information group, it goes from everything like you're talking about, like X's and O's, historical stats, the ref stuff. Like, I don't know if you're Wendy, you'll remember this for sure. This was 2011, and the Mavericks had lost like 16 of 17 playoff games.
Danny Crawford.
And it was a, like, trust me, Mark Cuban knew all those stats, but our stats and information group, before, I think I got those at the end of the previous year's playoffs, right? And I'm talking, it was like, pages of just relevant stats. And in the morning, I'm waking up every game. And fortunately, it happened in game two of the first round, so I didn't have to wake up early too many times. But as soon as old Danny Crawford got assigned a Mavs game, I hit send on the story that I had already written up. And it was a story where all it was we had stats and information stuff out the wazoo, and I was able to put it into coherent sentences.
He even made McMahon look smart. It's great work.
Congratulations.
And made Portland coach Nate McMillan rather perturbed, but that's okay.
Well, what's the over under on fines for complaining about officiating in this Lakers Memphis series? Is it 1.5?
Oh, I think over that for sure. I was going to say 2.5.
Yeah.
It's competitive. Well, it's going to be a lot.
Also, okay, so what's the over-under for combined tees for Draymond and Dylan Brooks? I'm going to put that at 3.
For the first round or for the playoffs?
No, but I'm sorry. Why am I saying Draymond? I'm thinking the second round. Damn it. Never mind. Scratch.
You guys,
another story. I think in terms of stories I'm working on, I've got a story that I'm working on in regards to that. I'll say this. They both have the same favorite referee. And if that matchup ends up happening, I'll write the story and you'll see who. It might surprise you. It's not Scott Foster with 3 little T's. I can tell you that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Daz, for coming on and spending some time on an off night here with us. For making us smarter yesterday, today, and tomorrow into the future. So,
yeah, I appreciate
travel
it.
Travel safe, and we'll see you out there on the road.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you to Adi, who's came in and pinch hit for Jackson on the night record here. Jackson had enough of you, McMahon, for today. And
so have you. Adios.
Thanks,
amigos.
Thanks,
go ahead.
Listen to Hoop Collective. Adios. Thanks, listen to Hoop Collective. Ha 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 ha.